to order, ask staff to call the roll.
Alder Revere?
Here.
Alder Vinever?
Here.
Alder Madison?
Here.
Alder Evers?
Here.
Alder Rummel?
Present.
Chair Curry, you have quorum.
Thank you, Dave. I know I got an email a short time ago saying that we didn't have any public comments. We have a couple registrants available to answer questions. So without public comments, I'll go into disclosures and recusals if any members of the body have so. Seeing none. We'll move on to the consent agenda. So since there are no registrants for public comment on item 15 and items 25, we have city clerk's staff available to answer questions but not wishing to speak. Are there other items alders would like removed from the consent agenda? Alder Rummel.
Thank you, President Curry. I would like to separate item 6 for an update from staff and also number 8.
All right. Item 6 and 8. Thank you. Alder Revere.
Thank you, President Curry. I want to take advantage of the city clerk being present, as you just articulated, and do have a couple of questions about agenda items 15 and 25, please.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any others? So far, I have item 6, 8, 15, and 25. Going once, going twice. All right. Alder Revere, a motion on consent agenda, please.
Thank you, President. I am pleased to move adoption of agenda items 2 through 5, agenda item 7, agenda items 9 through 14, and then agenda items 16 through 24. And lastly, agenda items 16 through 28, noting that agenda item 28 is the substitute resolution.
Thank you. Alder Vidver, is that a second?
Actually, I needed to disclose on item 26 that I'm an employee of the Wisconsin Division of Public Health. That will not affect my vote, but I'm happy to second.
Thank you. Killing two birds with one stone. And unless I see or hear otherwise, I will assume unanimous consent. All right, that is the case. We'll pass consent agenda excluding items 6, 8, 15, 25 for discussion purposes. Staff, if you were here on those, thank you for your time. That will move us into, let's see, agenda item 6, Legistar File 81449, authorizing the execution of a purchase of sale agreement between the City of Madison and the estate of Francis J. Music Jr. for the city's acquisition of the property located at 346 East Lakeside Street for assemblage with Olin Park in District 13. Alder Revere, can I get a motion?
I move adoption.
Second.
Thank you, Alders. And I believe we have HR Director Hilson with us. Maybe not.
This one will be probably the Parks
Lisa,
Division, if you have a question.
Okay, thank you. I got confused by the video.
Sure.
Absolutely. Good afternoon. Alder Rummel, I understand you just would like to have an update from staff regarding this acquisition. So this particular acquisition is a very important piece of completing the long-term vision for Olin Park. It is a single family residential property that's immediately adjacent to the land that we acquired in 2019, which is where our office building is currently situated. It's one more step in acquiring the land that long term, for over 50 years now, the city's been planning on trying to acquire to expand Olin Park. So we did have the property appraised, and our offer, which was accepted by the estate of the previous property of the property owner, was our offer was below what was appraised. Now I understand that you indicate that the Zillow and Trulia estimates are quite a bit below what our offer is, but that's not really taking into account the current market situation. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Maybe you said this, Lisa, but I think my first point I stumbled on is the sale price is a lot higher than what's assessed on the city's 2023 value. So I just wanted to clarify that, you know, how we came up with $850,000 for the property plus the additional for the real estate fees.
We had the property appraised by a private third-party appraisal company, and they came in quite a bit higher than what our offer is. The appraisal value came in around $890,000, so we made an offer below that that we thought that the property owners would accept, which they did.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Lisa? Seeing none, I believe the motion is to adopt. Unless I see or hear otherwise, safe to assume unanimous consent. So moved. That passes. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for being here for questions.
Thank you.
That will move us to agenda item 8. Legislative file 80936, a resolution authorizing the mayor and city clerk to enter into a 2-year competitively selected service contract with Baker Tilly to conduct a comprehensive compensation study throughout the city departments and divisions. The study will review job descriptions, organizational charts, policy handbooks, and pay plans, and provide comparisons and recommendations based on peer organizations. A motion on agenda item 8.
I move adoption.
Have a second. Alder Rummel, I thought I saw your mouth move. Alder Vitiver, thank you. Record you the second for that. And then I believe we turn it over to HR Director Hilson.
Thank you. I got an email today from Alder Rummel asking for an update on this project. As many of you know, we selected the vendor sometime in October, November for this project. This is a citywide project evaluating approximately 650 permanent positions, approximately 50 hourly or seasonal positions, classifying them, and then we will also be doing a compensation study so that compares our classifications against similar organizations. We're doing this in a collaborative way with the associations and unions, also providing input along the way. That includes input on things like potentially related to position descriptions, things like the organizations we're using as comparables. It's about a 4-phase project. If you kind of break it down, we'll have an initial kickoff that starts this month where we review some of the expectations with the vendor. We complete the contracting process. We have some initial orientation / briefings and have an agreed upon methodology for the study. We'll then go into the classification study, and that's really evaluating all of the classifications. The vendor we selected, Baker Tilly, has a 9-factor process for evaluating positions. And so based on a variety of different things like education required for the position, breadth of responsibilities, that sort of thing. So each position gets classified in accordance with their process. And then we move into the compensation study portion of this project, which will be the comparison to like organizations, followed by implementation. During that implementation phase, we will also be training our staff to use Baker Tilly's methodology to classify those positions so that we have a process that we can use in an ongoing way that helps ensure appropriate classification of those positions going forward. I will just mention that in addition to this project, you will also see the resolution moving forward for the changes to the personnel rules, and then next month, the ordinances helping codify those rules in the ordinances. And there are some changes that we made with that process. In part, Alder Vitiver asked a few months ago that we look at streamlining some of our processes to ensure that some of the things that we could do administratively could be done administratively and not have every detailed reclassification show up on the Finance Committee agenda. We evaluated our process and we'll be putting forward a resolution in the coming month or so that helps streamline those down to just those that are really significant changes in a position or how the agency is organized or structured so that those things that are really sort of small administrative expected changes in classification like career ladder growth and that sort of thing can go through automatically with the approval of Director Schmidtke and I. And so so that resolution will be coming through. In addition to the other personnel rule changes, we're hopeful that that helps streamline it a little bit. It won't mean nothing comes before you or the personnel board. There will still be a significant amount that does. But it will hopefully reduce that a little bit. We're also discussing with the budget manager the potential of merging some of those into single resolutions so that you don't have to process through so many resolutions, but rather can process through those sort of like agency at a time or significant structural change at a, you know, one at a time. So that's an update on where the process is. Are there any other questions, Alder Rummel?
Yes, thank you, Erin. And thanks, Alder Vitiver, for initiating that request, because one of the things I mentioned to Erin today was how so much comes before us. It just seems like we're rubber stamping and not adding value to. But I did start to think of, well, I spent some time kind of Googling other cities and seeing what their studies look like. So it was really interesting for me to get a little heads up on what this is about. And what two items that kind of caught my attention, one was pay compression and also kind of how you apply equity lens internally and externally. And I'm wondering, Erin, if you had any things to share about those questions.
Sure. So we didn't have them look at pay compression specifically, but that's something that we can look at agency by agency once those positions are classified.
Can you explain that for people who might not know what it means?
Oh, sure. So pay compression is sort of not enough space in between sort of the levels of responsibility or levels of compensation so that folks have incentive to grow or take higher levels of responsibility. So, for example, if you have a high level accountant, for example, reporting to someone who's only a range or two ranges above them, their incentive to take on that additional responsibility when there's very little additional compensation for it becomes more difficult. And so that compression makes recruitment really, really challenging. So by better banding classifications, you can create growth in the organization, and you can allow for folks to take on higher levels of responsibility, but have compensation appropriate to encourage that kind of growth. And then related to wage equity, we did ask as part of the RFP for them to provide an analysis in terms of specifically race and gender and wage equity, and to provide recommendations for mediation of those findings, whatever those findings are. I will just mention too, when you go through a process in the way that we are, that's more collaborative, where we get, for example, buy-in on who our comparable organizations are before agreeing on that with the vendor. It does take some additional time. I think if we sort of just turned it over and allowed Baker Tilly to do it without any sort of collaboration with our partners, we could potentially get this done by early fall, but it's likely that it will take at least until December, maybe even a couple months beyond that, to get a final product from them.
Thank you, Erin. One follow-up question is, you mentioned in your email, like the market forces of certain type of jobs, it's hard to compete with. And, you know, like there was, you know, the last few years, the Great Resignation and all these various things that are happening in the wider world of employment. How do you see all that fitting into this process?
Thank you for that question, Alder. I think we see market pressure push some sectors of the organization upward in terms of compensation, especially for jobs where, you know, it's hard to get folks to sign on when you think about things like engineers, IT professionals, finance professionals. Folks in every sector of employment are looking for those individuals to work at their organization. You don't have you a lot more competition for folks with that high level of professional certification that's required, with those high level skills required, and so that can push compensation upward to some extent. So we would anticipate that some areas of the organization will see more market pressure than others would.
And so I do have a final question. So that upward pressure then, you know, we have to balance with our own budget and that kind of thing. So are we setting expectations up for something we might not be able, I mean, you know, might not be able to meet, or, you know, like there's always a speculation, you know, the worst case scenario of, You know, every budget season, like, will we have to make cuts in positions? We don't want to, all those kind of things that we say out loud that we don't want to do that are out there as potentials.
Yeah. Well, Alder, I would say that, I mean, there is potential for the consultant to produce an implementation plan that's hard to achieve. I would also just mention that if we can't pay people adequately to get folks in those jobs and to have any level of retention that allows us to meet our ongoing needs, we're going to be in a difficult place either way, right? And so it's going to require a balanced approach. It's going to require, I think, some tough decisions, but I don't expect that, you know, it's going to result in the whole organization moving up. I think there will be some specific positions that are more distinctly out of line with market, and we'll have to really focus some attention on those that are most out of line.
Thank you very much, Director Hilson.
Alder Ridderberg, question?
I apologize if I missed this, but is the benefits package going to be taken into consideration when you consider the full compensation?
Yeah, so they're also going to benchmark our benefits package to let us know where we sit relative other comparable organizations. That was an ask that we made in the RFP.
Thank you for the questions, Alders. Any other? Alder Evers.
Thanks, President. I assume this is the compensation study that we budgeted for in the 2023 budget. I think we budgeted $300,000. So I'm assuming that when we put out the RFP, that this came in at a $215,000. So we saved some money there.
We did. So we had, you know, we had a number of bids. There were some that were considerably higher. And, you know, when you considered our benchmarking process in the RFP process, as well as the cost, which I think is about 30% of overall scoring, this is Baker Tilly was the vendor that was selected as a result of that process. And yeah, they I think they originally came in around 230. We asked them for best and final, and we ended up with around 215,000. I think there were some, you know, how it gets implemented may create some movement on either side of that number a little bit in the end, but it should be at significant savings from what was originally budgeted.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Wahili.
Thank you, President Kerry. And Erin, I have a question about, you know, the after the consultants' recommendations, knowing that, number one, when will this be effective? Like, which year is it going to be, 2025? And also, since we are facing a deficit in 2025, will that be the right time to increase, you know, staff salaries? Should there be any gap or whatever the consultants find?
Yeah, so I just want to be really clear that we consider this to be an evaluation process. They're evaluating where compensation and classification should place each individual, but it is not the decision-making process in terms of how that gets implemented. So they'll provide us with some implementation plans. We'll evaluate those, decide collaboratively how to move forward, and then produce a recommendation to council in terms of the implementation of that. But I can't give you a final on when that will occur necessarily. Our target is by the end of this year. That doesn't necessarily mean that at the start of 2025, we would be anticipating moving people, reclassifying folks, paying them differently. It may be a multi-year reclassification plan. When you've gone three decades without a classification study, and recommendations are you do them at least every 3 to 5 years, but when you've gone three decades, you don't really know how far out of line any of the classifications are. So we don't really know what we'll get back. In many cases, we see the city being very comparable to other organizations, certainly in the public sector, our size. But we also see in some places there being some misalignment and in particular some issues with recruitment and retention in some key areas. I don't know if that answered your question, but...
Yeah, no, thank you. So what I'm understanding is the implementation plan is the next phase. It's not something that's going to be effective in 2025, but it can take multi-year.
It could take a multi-year plan, yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sorry, screen jumping around me. Alder Evers, did you have a question, or is that just from the last time? All right. Seeing no hands, I'm assuming that means all questions for Director Hilson are finished, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Considering agenda item 8, the motion is to approve. Unless I see or hear otherwise, I will assume unanimous consent. Seeing none, that item then passes. And we will move into agenda item 15, which is legislative file 81333, authorizing the payment of goods from DMT Solutions, doing business as Bluecrest on a cooperative contract of an automated absentee ballot mailing system for the clerk's office prior to the delivery of all goods. And no, Jim from the clerk's office registered to answer questions, but I see Mary Beth with us. Mary Beth, should I turn it over to you?
Sure. I think Jim is on here somewhere, but I'm not quite sure how to find him, but I am happy to answer any questions.
I'll just rudely Jim is listed as an attendee. He'd need to be promoted as a panelist if he was to speak as well. Sorry, Mary Beth.
Okay, maybe.
And also, President Curry, would you like a motion first?
I would. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm happy to move adoption of the related agenda items 15 and 25.
Second.
Thank you. Good call in combining those two, Alder. While IT is maybe promoting Jim, Alder Revere, did you have questions right away?
Yeah, perhaps maybe in the... For the sake of efficiency, although I don't mean to preempt you, Mary Beth, if you are going to generously share an overview of these, I will note that Deputy City Clerk Verbeck did share with all alders via email a description of each of these related resolutions in the last week or two, and which was very helpful. So I won't ask any questions that were answered in Jim's email to all of us. Since we are the Finance Committee, my main questions, Mary Beth and Jim, just relate to the fiscal notes, the funding. And the first one is if you could just confirm both the automated ballot, the automated absentee ballot mailing system and the election security cards. Do we have a sufficient funding from our grant from the Center for Tech and Civic Life to cover the capital costs of both of those items? And will that then exhaust the current grant that we've been awarded by that organization?
I'll start speaking. It looks like Jim just maybe unmuting himself too. But yes, that would exhaust our grant funds and go a little bit over the grant funds, but we would have enough in our budget for election supplies and not having a large primary this February. That does give us a little extra savings as well. And I'll let Jim finish answering your question.
Yeah, I was just going to repeat what Mayor Beth had said. It would exhaust the grant funds, but there would be a little leftover that we would need to cover. But having smaller primary is going to help have some savings there to cover that.
You know, thank you both for confirming that. And then, as we, I think, all know, the legislature, unfortunately, has moved forward with the constitutional amendment that, correct me if I'm wrong, will be on our April spring ballots that would prohibit future funding of this sort. If that is adopted by the voters, I presume that, assuming these resolutions are enacted prior to whatever the effective date of that constitutional amendment is, if it is approved by the voters statewide, that we would still be safe in terms of timing. Is that correct?
Uh, Attorney Haas has advised us that we should spend the grant funds before April, and I see he's on the call too, so you can add any additional advice he has for us there.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Yes, Oliver, our reading of the proposed constitutional amendment is that the money would have to be spent before the results of that April election are finalized at the state level, which is the reason that the resolution is framed the way it is, so that the funds can be spent by that time.
So it would be upon certification in later April is when that constitution would be enacted if it is approved by the voters.
Right. Probably about 10 days after the election is when the results would be certified.
I see. Well, I'm relieved that through these two resolutions, we're able to utilize this generous grant and not lose it if the voters unfortunately do enact this constitutional amendment. And then in terms of continuing with some finance related questions, please, Mary Beth and Jim, and thank you, Mike, very much. As I read the resolution and or Jim's email, the automated absentee ballot mailing system would be delivered to us in time for the August partisan primary. Is that correct?
I'll
go ahead, Jim. In terms of how this is a finance question, I'm wondering if you have calculated, I know the fiscal note doesn't get into this, but what savings there might be on hourlies in terms of how we currently distribute our absentee ballots. Would those savings on hourlies, assuming there are some, would those start with the August partisan primary?
Sure. Yeah, As far as the delivery, I know for sure we could have the sorter, which is part of that. It doesn't cover a lot of what we use our manual operations right now for. The inserter, I think, would cover a large majority of what we have right now as far as our election officials doing it by hand. I believe they could have that maybe even before April. But the inserter is the part that takes a little longer. The lead time that they gave me was in November as far as finalizing before the end of the year. Since we weren't able to finalize before the end of the year, that lead time might change a little bit. I don't know if it necessarily be before the August election. I think at the lead and as far as offsetting costs that we've been using right now for sort of a manual operation for absentee, I believe the cost we're doing is probably about $3,000 a day for our operations right now by using our election officials. And again, that's subject to a lot of human error and ballots missing or multiple ballots being placed in an envelope, people getting the wrong ballot that would be cured by a system like this.
Thank you, Jimmy. I had a little trouble hearing everything you just articulated. But the bottom line is that the savings will for sure occur in future years on hourly election officials assisting you. But depending on the delivery timing, we might not see savings this year. Is that a summary of your response? Again, I'm sorry you were breaking up a little.
If I can try to fill in the gaps of where Jim's call cut out, my understanding is that we think we may have all the pieces together for the August election, but that might be pushing it a little bit. So we think certainly for the November election. With that being said, we have become used to delays, such as with our office construction. So we're not totally counting on having everything in place by November, but if we could get it in place before the November election in time to start mailing out those absentees, we'd save $3,000 a day in personnel cost from bringing in election officials to help mail out absentees every day. And another great value would be that we would be able to eliminate a lot of the human error that we see through that process, where somebody might end up getting the wrong ballot, or an envelope might go out without a ballot inserted. And that's what we're even more excited about, eliminating some of those human errors.
Yes, absolutely. And again, Jim's helpful email made that point in the resolution, might as well. I can't remember. It's been a while since I read the resolution. But yes, excellent point. And I know we've had those human errors in the past, and it's always been a difficulty in terms of timing and so forth, getting the corrected ballots to our voters. And then I think my and thank you, Mary Beth. And I think my final question then is in the, and it was helpful and appreciate that in Legistar, you attached the proposal for the automated absentee ballot mailing system. And if I understood the proposal correctly, again, just thinking of operating budget costs again, how overall we'll be, I think, saving money on the hourlies. But in terms of moving forward with the automated absentee ballot mailing system, it looks like there would be annual software charges in the order of what's estimated to be about approximately $20,000 annually, if I read that correctly. Are there other operating costs involved with the new mailing system? And if it is only $20,000, we would still obviously be saving operating budget funds, correct?
That's pausing.
Yeah, there's also annual maintenance as well for the two machines that would cover that as well.
What has our vendor then estimated our annual or operating costs to them being moving forward in future years? Hope we lost Jim, but
I think we may have.
Sorry, I missed part of that question.
Oh, I'll repeat. So thank you. So again, I don't know if the $20,000 figure, if I read that correctly in the proposal, in future years for the software, and then you said that there's also a maintenance agreement cost. What do those total, Jim, and estimated and or estimated cost in future years, out of curiosity?
I can't recall the top of my head. I think it was about $35,000, maybe
annually in future years for that would be due to the vendor
annually. Yes.
Okay. All right, thank you. Was there something else you wanted to add, Mary Beth? I'm sorry, I know you started.
No, I paused to let Jim answer the question, and then I think he's lost, and I start to answer, and he appears. So I'm sorry about the awkwardness of that.
Oh, no problem. Okay, thank you both very much. And again, thanks also to the city attorney for responding. I'm complete now, President Curry. Thanks.
Thank you, Alder Revere. Thank you, Jim and Mary Beth. Looks like we may have one more question from Alder Ridiver.
Yes, I apologize. I just wanted to try to sort of like get an overall sense of the cost savings of introducing these two items. Like if you took this out, let's say for 5 years, like what would be the estimated cost savings with knowing that we have some ongoing costs, but that we're saving personnel?
Sure. Well, this, as Mary Beth mentioned, it's about $3,000 a day. We currently pay our election officials to do this manually, and that's over the period. So for spring elections, for nonpartisan elections, we send out absentee ballots starting 21 days prior to an election. For federal elections, it's 47 days prior to an election. So that's the fall election. So in that period of time, we would be spending about $3,000 a day for the manual operation that we currently do.
But then there were ongoing costs of the software? So like I'm trying to get to the net. What's the net benefit?
So we believe over the net we would have a savings because we're talking about so 42 days in the spring, we would have be spending $3,000 a day and 94 days a year, every other year. For fall elections, we would be spending $3,000 a day, whereas we would have an annual cost where we wouldn't have the manual operation and bringing people in, but would rather have this automated system that costs roughly about $60,000 a year in both the software and the hardware maintenance.
Alder Vidiver, does that answer your question?
Just means I got to do some math. But I'll do that behind the scenes and then I'll check back.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Just to reference, the email that I mentioned and Alder Vervier mentioned was sent by Jim on January 9th, in case folks had not had a chance to review that. All right. Don't want to belabor us. Just a reminder. Alder Vidiver, for clarification, did you want me to move on or you would touch base on a...
Move on.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We have agenda items 15 and 25 before us. I did read 15. I did not read 25, just for the record. So that's legislative file 81466, a resolution to authorize a non-competitive purchase of goods from PrinceElect as sole source provider of election security cards for the city clerk's office. Were there any questions on item 25? Seeing none. Motion before us is to approve both. Unless I see or hear otherwise, I will assume unanimous consent. And that is unanimous and passes. Thank you. That then takes us to the end of our agenda. I entertain a motion for adjournment.
I move to adjourn.
Second.
Moved and seconded. I will assume unanimous consent unless I hear or see otherwise. All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a good evening.